Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Betches Media presents...
He's in the building!
Afternoon Tea with host Sammy Sage.
Is that what you're saying?
Please proceed, Governor.
Presented by the Betches Sub Podcast.
Better hope there's a lot of girls listening to this with the volume turned down.
Your weekly dose of political therapy.
Cardi, that's what I've been doing my whole life.
And now, with this week's guest...
Well, there were three of us in this marriage, so it was a bit crowded.
Your host, Sammy Sage.
Welcome to today's episode of Afternoon Tea, your companion to the morning announcements and weekly political therapy session brought to you by The Betches Sup. Today's guest is Molly Jongfast, editor-at-large at The Daily Beast, Vogue contributor, and host of the podcast The New Abnormal. Molly is here to talk with me about what to make of the Republican Party these days, if there will ever be accountability for Donald Trump, and what it was like to be a participant in a vaccine trial. With that, let's get the tea from Molly. Molly, welcome back. We had you on earlier in the pandemic, but so much has changed since then. How are you doing?
It's funny. I'm glad no one can see us, but like my hair is out to here and I look like I'm going to die. So yeah, I'm good. You know, the thing is, and I wrote this piece for Vogue this weekend about this, like I have had this very privileged pandemic experience, right? Like I haven't, you know, there are all these people who have like had to work and deliver food and work in restaurants and drive taxis when it hasn't been safe, right? So I've had this very privileged experience of being able to like stay home and not go anywhere and stay safe largely. And so in that sense, it's been fine. And like, as you and I both know, there are like lines around the block for food banks and soup kitchens and like American society is crumbling. So my experience has been very, very lucky. And so I don't want to complain, but in the same sense, it's been very weird. And I think that we all have had this kind of strange, you know, it's been a year where mostly I've sat on the sofa and watched television. I mean, and like, I've also done the Peloton, like for a
That's more activity than I've had, honestly.
Oh, man, that fucking Peloton. Like, the relationship I have with that, you know, I'm like, I hate you. I'm like, 75 minutes, gotta go.
That's a lot. That's a long class.
I mean, if people are like, well, do you like this teacher or that teacher? And I'm like, I turn it off and watch CNN. Just so bad.
People ask me that too. Like, what do you like? What do you like? Which workout instructor do you like? I'm like, I don't care. I'm just watching the video so that I can listen to a podcast. Often your podcast. So yeah.
Oh
yeah. It's one of my
favorites.
Gets me through the days.
I mean, it's interesting because it's like, there aren't that many podcasts that like, there are a lot of podcasts. There are a lot of really good podcasts, but I think to have something where it's newsy, but you could all, you know, and it's a lot of these people where you want to hear what they have to say. Like, we have Congressman Neguse coming up, who's the youngest impeachment manager ever. And I'm like, he's great. I'm obsessed with him.
Great.
It's like so weird to me that you have a state like Colorado where you have Congressman Neguse, right? He's like the youngest impeachment manager ever. He's amazing. He was born and, you know, his parents came from Africa. They are like first generation immigrants. He's like so brilliant. And then you have Lauren Boebert. Right. She's also from Colorado. Like, you know, the gun congresswoman. You know.
It's funny because I was thinking that because I was reading David Perdue's like his announcement that he wants to potentially run again. And he's like saying how like Georgia's not really a blue state. And we now have the most like radical liberal senators from Georgia. But like, I'm the true Georgia. And it's true. Like, what is the real Colorado? Is it Joe Neguse or is it Lauren Boebert, you know?
And the thing that's so weird about Lauren Boebert is Aspen. She's Aspen,
is
Colorado.
She?
Like, think of the people you know who live in Aspen, Colorado. Like, big, rich liberals.
Yeah, but no one who lives there year-round. Does she live
there? She doesn't live
there.
She lives near there, but her district includes Aspen.
That's fascinating.
So, I mean, I think, And it, I mean, what's so interesting to me about Georgia, I have to say, like, I was during that impeachment, I was listening when they said Senator Ossoff, you know, I got a little chill. But, you know, Senator Warnock is the 11th African-American senator ever. Like, think about that. 11.
The Senate sort of fancies itself this like very serious body, but the quality has really gone down a lot. I've definitely wanted to talk to you about the acquittal. Like, how are you interpreting?
You know what's funny about the acquittal is I thought for sure he would get off. I think every betting man had thought that he would get off. But then what was so funny was when he did get off, it was horrible. Like, it actually was horrible.
Yeah.
Everybody knew it was going to happen. And it was the most bipartisan impeachment ever, right? We all knew that this was like, and yet it was awful. Like, it just, there was something about it that was just like, and you know, he had announced that he was going to go on a victory tour, which was, and there just was like this awful kind of, a lot of people made this terrifying parallel to like Hitler when he first in the early 30s. It was really horrible and scary and awful. So I was surprised I felt as terribly as I did afterwards.
It's those moments where, like, you know, the Republicans would.
Right.
There's nothing they wouldn't do. So you're like, OK, they'll do anything. But then in the moments when they actually do it, it's like a little piece of America died. I mean, I question how much I really say that because it's like, did it really? Like, this is sort of aligned. But maybe it's more like a little piece of the hopeful person who grew up, like, had her formative years in like most of her 20s with Barack Obama being the president. I come from a place where it's like, okay, the right thing can happen. You know, we're moving forward. But I guess we're just like really not moving forward. And the Hitler comparison is very appropriate.
I mean, it is this interesting thing. I come from, you know, I'm 42, so I'm older than you are. And so I grew up with like Reagan winning. I mean, when I was young and me being like, you know, and I remember Bush won going to war and thinking that we were all going to die.
So you've thought this a few times.
Yeah. So I've had, I mean, the joke is like when I was pregnant with my first kid, my husband and I went and protested the Iraq War too. For Bush. And yeah, and we were like, wow, this guy is going to kill us all. So to have a president who actually did kill 500,000 of us is just so scary and bad. Yeah. So it's pretty bad.
Yeah. This is the theme of the conversation. It's really bad.
Yeah.
Okay. I have to ask, why do you think that the senators ultimately voted to acquit? Like, why does Mitch McConnell not want to sideline Trump?
I think what has happened here. So, and remember, a bunch did, right? Ben Sasse and a bunch of people who I didn't think would do the right thing did the right thing. So, in some ways, I was happy about that. Like, that felt like a win because it's like a sign that bipartisanship. It's not bipartisanship, but it's a sign that some people in the Senate will actually do the right thing. In my mind, I think what happened was that the way the Republican Party is set up, there's no reward for doing the right thing, right? And a lot of these people didn't want primary challengers. A lot of these people didn't, you know, it's this weird phenomenon where the Republican Party has really become anti-democracy.
Yeah.
You know, they don't think of democracy as like the end game. They're a small party. They're trying to keep control. They know the demographics are shifting. And they know, I mean, remember the number, there was some statistic, like the amount of senators who voted to impeach represented 20. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So like the blue states have more people in them and there are more blue states. But because the way the Republicans have figured out how to game the system, we Democrats are in a disadvantage. So he wanted to have it both ways. He gave that speech that was like, because he wants the corporate money, right? All this corporate money went away when the insurrection happened because corporations don't like, it turns out capitalism is not like a
bad look.
So that's good news. I mean, as much as any of this is good news, because there is no good news, not to be depressive or anything. But capitalism doesn't like a coup. And so, you know, it's just a whole thing. So I would say he gave that speech that was like, we don't like coups. But before that happened, he voted because he didn't want, I mean, he just got reelected. I don't think he's running again. He's quite old. He's very rich. He doesn't have, you know, a long political career ahead of him. But I do think that he wants to try to keep his caucus together, right? Power is the thing for this guy. And 2022 is going to be a year with a lot of drama and, you know, a map that looks very bad for Republicans. So I would say that I think he wanted to try and keep his caucus together. So he voted with Trump because he needs Trump for those primaries, right? Like, and there are seats, I mean, there are seats, you know, Alabama. I mean, these places, people are retiring and he's going to need Trump. Alabama, he's not so worried about, but like in Ohio or Pennsylvania and it's a bad map for Republicans. He would like to get it back. I don't think he wants to end his career in the Senate as minority leader. And so I think it was like the most craven thing he could do, which was appeal to the corporations, get the money back, but in the same sense, not alienate the Trumpers.
Yeah, you're right. It almost would make no sense that he would do anything else when you sort of think about it.
Hey, American Fever Dream listeners, I'm here to tell you that there is no reason to panic the next time you're searching for the perfect gift. Now you can use Gift Mode on Etsy. Gift Mode on Etsy is here to take the stress out of gifting so you can find the perfect item for anyone and any occasion. It's easy. Just tap or click Gift Mode on your Etsy app or Etsy.com. Then answer a few short questions about who you're shopping for and what they like. And Gift Mode instantly gives you curated gift ideas based on hundreds of personas. Now it is simple to find gifts made by independent sellers for all the people in your life. So whether you need a Mother's Day gift for the quilter or a birthday present for the vintage hunter, there is something for everyone on Etsy. And like I told you guys before, I got my wedding bands on Etsy. I was able to meet with a creative, independent artist. They took my vision into reality, and now my wife and I have custom wedding bands that we absolutely love. A gifting moment is always just around the corner, whether it's a birthday, an anniversary, a holiday, or even just a day to say thank you. Gift Mode on Etsy has you covered. Need to find the perfect gift? Don't panic. Try Gift Mode on Etsy now.
How strange do you think it is that Trump is still casting this sort of control over the party, even when he's not on Twitter, he's not on Facebook as of now? Like, how is he maintaining control? Like, those press releases, who cares? Is it just that he's going to, like, build a parlor, a Fox News audience? But
I think the thing, though, Trump, that's been really interesting is just how cowardly Republicans have been. Like, this whole time, right? You would ask them and they'd be like, I haven't seen the tweet. Except for the ones who were like, I love Trump. And if I have to kill, you know, a woman to prove it, I'll happily, you know. So I do think that largely these Republicans are pretty cowardly and they don't want to stand up to him. I think also some of it is Trump has galvanized the Republican base in a way that no other Republican candidate has. Right. It's not like, I mean, Mitt Romney happens to be a much better human. That's without, right. I don't think that's a controversial statement in any way, but
yeah.
But unfortunately for the world, Mitt Romney does not have a hold on people the way Trump does. Trump had this very charismatic way about him and people love to cover him. Media love to cover him. And, you know, he just was charismatic and these supporters loved him. And he did a lot of really sleazy stuff. I mean, and criminal stuff, God knows what else, but he captured their imagination in a way that I don't know that other Republican presidents have. I think Republicans are sort of with at sea. I also think there's a sense in which party never really has a leader until it has a nominee. So like, if you look back 2 years ago, would you say, who would you say is the head of the Democratic Party, right? It wasn't Hillary. I mean, maybe, but Obama really wasn't around, right?
It's like kind of a Bernie Hillary two-headed monster.
Well, they're just like, maybe it's Nancy because she's the highest level elected Democrat. I mean, it's just like a party doesn't really have a leader until it does. So that's why I would say this Trump thing, it's like, yes, he's the leader, but he's also, I mean, I think about this a lot because people are like, well, he's still the head of the party. And I'm like, yes and no. Like, his power is definitely diminished. The fact that 7 Republican senators voted against him is a real sign that it's diminished. The fact that Mitch McConnell was like, look, court of law, if you want to use this, good luck to you. So I would say I don't think it's really diminished quite the same way.
Right. I mean, I did see a poll this morning that was like, it was ranking basically all the Republicans and he got like 53%. And the next highest person was like Mike Pence, who got 12%, something really embarrassing. I mean, like, how can the Republicans feel safe when this man literally tried to kill a member of their own party? And why do they think that it won't be them?
That is the strange truth of Trumpism, right? Is that nobody ever thinks it'll be them until it is, right?
Which makes me feel like the hold he has over the party is really more of like a cult-esque hold than it is. And you said it's like, it's a small party. So the core of the Republican Party is like that small cult. It was clearly on a different page about the democracy we do or don't live in the whole time. And they just had no one to sort of guide them to that.
I think that's right. I also think that we are, you know, I always think that this is the big problem is the messaging, right? Republicans have Fox News and they have all of these right-wing media outlets. And these right-wing media outlets are so clear on their message. I mean, I was just writing this piece about how they've started blaming Nancy Pelosi for the Capitol riots. And it's like, but they have a whole thing. Like, it's her fault because she should have been in charge because...
They always have a whole thing.
Right. And again, I was like, the messaging of it was like, these 4 Republican congressmen sent the letter. Then Jason Chaffetz, who used to be a Republican congressman, wrote an opinion piece on Fox.com. Then Sean Hannity did a story on it that night. You know what I mean? Like, it's like they're so... Right.
It's like an ecosystem.
And like, you don't have that in mainstream media because mainstream media doesn't operate like that. And because you have the right media saying mainstream media is biased, you have the mainstream media pushing further to the right. So you have this really bad kind of weird sort of entropy, which is really scary and bad.
Yeah, I think also on the left, like, there's a lot more hand-wringing. There's a lot more like, oh, like, let's look for something to find wrong with Biden so that we can say we cover him equally. And then they're writing about, like, Mina Harris. And it's like, who gives a fuck about what Mina Harris is doing? It's just, like, it's so frustrating.
I think that they are in a situation where they're not going to be, there really isn't going to be a head of the party until there is. It will be... I think it will be like I've read this thing that said that if a party loses 3 times, they start to get the idea that what they're doing isn't working. Right. But if they get shellacked in 2022, and remember, they're all set up to not because Democrats control all 3 levers of Congress, Congress, the Senate, the presidency. But if they get shellacked in 2022, that I think will be the end of Trump.
Do you think there's any chance that he could be held criminally liable and like House?
Mitch McConnell said that he could be held criminally liable. Do I think he will?
Do you think he will? Like, he's never been held criminally liable for real.
I mean, I am reminded of OJ, right? That was like a big case when I was growing up. And it was like,
yeah.
Everybody knew that OJ did it, right? Like, it was like not, you know, there were no other suspects, right? And he behaved like a guilty person and he got off, but he then committed all these other crimes and ended up in jail. And that's kind of my feeling around Trump, is it's like a little bit like OJ.
Do you like that he could get in jail for something else? I mean, there's endless things. And to think that no one's even considering looking into his actions about the pandemic, which there's been reporting all along that they were corrupt and nepotistic and horrible. The fact that, like, no one's even thinking, oh, how could we hold him accountable for the 500,000 people who died from coronavirus? Like, that's so far out of the realm of options is just kind of crazy.
I think he could be a civil, there could be civil cases for the rest of his life. For example, like things like where they, I mean, where people can sue. Think about all the Capitol rioters who said things like, Trump told me I'm part of his army. Trump wants us here. They said to the police, Trump sent us here. I mean, obviously, and even that was what Mitch McConnell said.
Flags. And that's what Mitch McConnell said
was like that Trump teed it up. So in that sense, like, could the family of the murdered police officer, could they sue? Could the six people who died in the insurrection or five other people who died in the insurrection, could they sue? I think they're the civil questions. And that's why Trump's been so quiet, is because he's worried about the civil cases, which could be millions of dollars.
I haven't understood his quiet at all. Like, I don't know what I was listening to. Maybe it was your podcast. Maybe it was a different one where they were saying how he's like enjoying being like low key or something.
I think he's just, I mean, I think there are two things. One, he's not on social media, so he has no place to like go do a crazy tweet. But the other thing is, I think he's really genuinely worried about these civil cases. Because remember, Trump doesn't have, you know, he's raised money, but there's that money can only be used for certain things. It can't be. And this, these lawyers for the impeachment were quite expensive, and he couldn't use the White House counsel, which he had used last time. So, he ended up, I think he's concerned about his financial situation.
Okay, one can hope. If he can only get these kind of like clowns for the impeachment, how is he going to get any lawyer?
I think what's going to happen is that how is he going to get any lawyer? This is a good question. I think probably he's going to be able to sort of find the people that are, you know, available to him. Like that, you know, in the end, even though he didn't have such great lawyers, he won, right?
It makes me mad that those lawyers technically get to count this as a win.
The lawyers were really bad, and they were like hilariously bad. The problem with the lawyers is that they were kind of, it didn't matter, right? Because the deck was so stacked, and you had jurors like Ted Cruz going in and meeting with the defense team. So I don't, you know, and Ron Johnson trying to like kill Mitt, you know, screaming at Mitt Romney because Mitt Romney wanted witnesses. I mean, like, imagine a trial like this. It's like a satire. So I do think that it didn't matter. But yeah, he's going to have shitty lawyers. But, you know, I don't know. He won't pay them.
Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace. They have a curated collection of investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry. Each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts. You can buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10.
Okay, the last thing I want to talk about before we move on to our final segment, the four questions, I want to talk about your experience in the vaccine trial, because that is a pretty crazy experience. Can you just tell us about it?
So I am like a very cowardly person. I have like a terrible anxiety disorder, and I'm extremely cowardly. Like, you know, I mean, I had my children, but like, I barely did that because I was like, hospitals, blood, I don't want to die.
I'm the same way. So the fact that you could have three kids is pretty.
And my little twins, who are not that little, were made in a lab in New Jersey because we had this Jewish genetic disease. So like, they gave me this bag of needles when I started the IVF, and I looked at it and I was like, I'm going to pass it. Like, I looked at this bag of needles and I was like, I'll die.
But you did it.
I did it.
So,
and I gave myself some of the shots, but so I've been very cowardly, but because I had lived in the city in March and April of 2020, I've been pretty convinced I was going to die of COVID. And I had had, you know, everybody I knew, I had known a lot of people who had it. I had known a lot of people whose dads had died of it, like a lot. Like shockingly high. And I had known people were like, terrible, terrible stories. So I had decided that, like, you know, I was very worried I was going to die of it. And then when these drug trials started coming up, I was like, I'm getting in a fucking drug trial, even though I am like the biggest coward in the world. I don't even like to have my blood drawn, but I was like, I don't want to die of COVID. I'm going to get in a trial. And, you know, I guess I was a little worried about the, you know, the thing they were injecting into me, but right. I wasn't that worried. I don't know. I mean, I just felt like, you know, it is the first time mRNA vaccines have ever been used on humans. So, I mean, I was a little bit...
Nothing to worry about.
I had written to some doctors. I had some like Twitter doctors. So I wrote to them and I said, you know, am I going to die? And they said no. And, you know, because the way these trials worked, a lot of doctors signed up for them. Like a lot. Like most, like my trial was like 20% medical professionals.
How did you know if you were going to get the placebo? Like, do you know yet if you got the real thing?
I got, I got unblinded, but it was the whole.
Which did you have?
I had the placebo and then the vaccine, they gave us the vaccine at the end of the trial.
Okay.
So that was the way it was set up. But, and, you know, it was very like, it was pretty, you know, they did it in a way that was the appropriate way for the state. I mean, it was the whole thing. But because I didn't have it in New York, I had it in Connecticut because I was part of Yale.
Got it. Wow. So was it once you had the, you didn't know what you had, if you had the placebo or not. How did that feel? Like maybe I'm fully protected and maybe I'm not.
I was pretty careful because I knew that that there was 50-50 shot and I didn't want to get it. So I just didn't do anything differently. And then, and I've been pretty careful this whole time. And then, and you know, and something for people who are listening to this is like, you're not protected after your first shot, right? Mm-hmm. You're not, you're still, the way it works is, and I feel like they're not talking about this enough, is that with Pfizer and Moderna, you have your first shot, you have nothing. So like the people in the Capitol riots who got, you have nothing for the first few days. So like the people in the, or maybe you have 20%, but it's not. Yeah. So like,
it's like AOC who got it that day.
Right. Like, for example, there were a bunch of people at the Capitol riots who got sick with COVID, like right. Representative yeah. John Paul. And it was because they had the shot the day before. So you need, it's like 2 weeks to get to 50 to 70% from the first shot. And then it's 2 weeks from the second shot to get to 94%. So you really, there are a lot of people now you see who are getting it after the first shot because they think they have more immunity than they do. So it really is important that we, when we talk about these vaccines, that we talk about that this is really a long game and that we have to be really careful. It really is, you know, it's like 60 days after the first shot.
Right. I feel like one of the biggest things that was botched this whole pandemic is just the messaging.
Oh, yeah.
From like the maybe you should wear a mask, maybe you shouldn't. And now there's that messaging about like people don't really know that they think they're fine after one shot. But also like the idea of wearing two masks, like they've now said that you should be wearing two masks, but no one really. Yeah. I just went to the post office like a few hours ago and I was the only person wearing two masks. And I'm like,
the two mask thing. Yeah. I mean, meanwhile, like you live in New York, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So like we're very lucky here because everybody's wears masks. We're not like in a place where people aren't wearing masks, but people are wearing masks. Like their noses are sticking out. They got the mask over here. You know,
I mean, I don't trust it unless it's like. No.
Yeah.
A serious thing.
Yeah. I mean, the mask, there's been no mask, you know, people wearing masks that look like, you know, don't look like masks. I mean, the number one spreader of COVID misinformation was Trump.
Yeah.
Right. So like, I mean, it was a losing game, but I think what's been really cool is the Biden administration, I think, has really been killing it with the vaccines and they're up to like 2 million a day vaccine days. Which means, remember, if we have 300 million people in America and we can get, you know, we need to get to like 250 million vaccinated in order to like not all die. So that is very cool. You
know? Yeah. I mean, I think the Biden administration has just been so like quietly competent.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's so refreshing. Amazing. And I seriously hope that we get to keep it.
And, me too.
Yeah. It's like, I just want the Democrats to like get on making sure that we do.
Did you know that women make up 56% of law students?
It's clear that the future of the legal field is female. So why are so many legal podcasts and reviews authored by men? Hi, I'm Leah Littman.
I'm Kate Shaw.
And with Melissa Murray, we are the hosts of Strict Scrutiny.
Each week, we break down the latest headlines and biggest legal questions facing our country to give you expert views you won't hear anywhere else.
Strict Scrutiny is your guide to the Supreme Court.
New episodes drop every Monday. Make sure to subscribe to Strict Scrutiny wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
All right, Molly, thank you so much. We are going to do our four questions.
Okay, awesome.
Okay, what is your happiest memory?
My happiest memory in like my whole life.
Your whole life.
It's funny because it's like I've had a lot of really happy memories in my life. And I had this wonderful grandmother who I was very close to, who was married to Howard Fast, who was this communist writer who was jailed during the House Under American Activities. And his wife would, like, my grandmother would take care of me, and I would stay there, and she would bake me these tiny squares of carrot cake that she would cut into tiny pieces because they had less calories if they were tiny. And we'd watch Murder, She Wrote. And then I would go to sleep in their guest room, and I would wake up to hear my grandfather on the typewriter. He worked on a typewriter, and very the sort of clacking of the keys at 6 o'clock in the morning. And so I would say that was one of my happiest memories.
That's really sweet. I feel like, yeah, I can relate to having a great grandmother, not a great grandmother, but an amazing grandmother who really, it's very special. So that's very nice. Okay, next question. If you could go on vacation with any two people, dead or alive, who would they be and where would you go?
I might go to Italy with my daughter. I love my daughter and my mother. That's like my favorite thing.
That sounds like a great answer.
Yeah, I love them both so much, and like that would be really fun for me, you know?
That's really sweet. A lot of familial answers. I like it. What are you horrible at and cannot be trusted with ever?
Spelling.
Okay.
I'm horrible at spelling. Wait.
It's tough for a writer.
I'm bad at driving and spelling and like all domestic stuff, like making fires. I can grocery shop, but like I'm very flaky. I can't cook. I can't really fold anything. I've tried to fold things. It's been a disaster. I can't do a lot of things. I'm very good at dog walking, but otherwise I have almost no skills. I can't ride a bike. I can't fix anything. And I have a lot of trouble changing batteries. You know, I'm like actually quite klutzy. So I like hit my head on things, and I've broken my toe like 15 times. So I'm not so good at some things.
You know, you've had a much easier time with this question than the other.
I'm very like left brain, right brain, you know, so like I'm good at what I'm good at. I mean, I don't know how good I am, but I have some, you know, in some ways I'm good, but like part of my brain is just like, can't do like a lot of things. And even like with driving, I've had so many car accidents because I have really bad, like a lot of car, like even I took a rental car out this summer and I drove it once and I cost thousands of dollars of damage.
Are you not like afraid to drive? Like I would be too afraid to drive.
I love to drive, oh, but I know that I shouldn't. So right. I try not to, but I love it. I think it's very fun. But it's really fun, but I have very bad, something is wrong with my vision and my depth perception. And then when I start to get freaked out, I just stop whatever I'm doing. So I've hit so many things. It's just like a very, So yes, I'm a terrible, do not let me drive your car. I mean, or do let me drive your car.
Okay, last question. If you could, this might be harder. If you could magically change anything about the world, like what would you change?
I would, child poverty. And that's a thing that like is actually a thing that we could do now, right now. Which
Jeff Bezos could do it. Just him.
Well, even, yes, he could, though I think he won't. But even like Janet Yellen talks a lot about this, and we have this idea that I'm hoping will really happen, this idea of these child savings, these sort of, we're not supposed to call them tax credits, but basically we pay people to raise our kids. And the economy on this is really good. Like, kids get out of poverty, they grow up, they eat food, they are able to like get jobs and live in the world. And as you know, we are in this very rich country, and the idea to me that we could conceivably do this is very exciting. So if I could do one thing, it would be child poverty. I mean, look, are there other things that I think that we should do, like the planet and human rights? And there's a lot of stuff, but like child poverty seems like something that we could actually, I mean, certainly in America, and I think that that's the kind of idea that's sticky, that could get picked up in other places in the world. I think that would be very exciting.
I like that. Practical, attainable,
yeah,
important. Great answer. All right. Thank you so much, Molly. It has been such a pleasure to have you and to chat about all these crazy things that are happening.
Thanks. I can't wait to borrow your car.
Oh,
just kidding.
Yeah. One day.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Oh, look, wait. You want to see a dog?
Yes.
This is my little prince.
Oh, my gosh. You have a lot of dogs, right?
Three. Yes.
Three. That's amazing. I now have two. I just discovered that Real Housewife of Beverly Hills, Kyle Richards, has six dogs. That's like a jungle.
That is amazing.
I would love to have that if I ever leave this city.
That's the best thing I've ever heard. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to today's Afternoon Tea. If you're enjoying this podcast, you can help us grow by heading over to the feed on iTunes to rate, review, and subscribe, or follow if you're listening on Spotify. Until next Friday, I'm Sammy Sage, and this has been your political therapy session. Afternoon Tea is brought to you by The Betches Sup. Our producers are Sean Kilby, Jorge Morales, Stacey Wong, and Nicole Pellegrino. Social media by Amanda Duberman. Artwork by Brittany Levine. Our editor is Stacey Wong. Be sure to follow Morning Announcements on Spotify or subscribe on Apple Podcasts so you never miss a morning news update. Betches.